Good. I think we're ready to go on the session. Thank you for joining us. So today we're going to talk about the topic is tried and true practices for transforming SharePoint solutions to the cloud-ready solutions. And this is something what we've been actually working with in the Microsoft for quite a long time with many of the customers as well. So we're helping quite a few of our Office 365 dedicated customers to transform their customizations from the full-trust code solutions and farm solutions to the app model solutions. My name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in Office 365 engineering, and I'm also the technical lead or the coordination lead for the patterns and practices guidance for Office 365.
And I'm Steve Walker. I'm also a senior program manager. I'm on the Office 365 extensibility team. Previously, I was on the same team as Vesa, and we still work very, very closely together. Patterns and practices came out of, like Vesa said, working with a lot of our customers who were trying to move away from their traditional development practices. And so everything that you'll see here today are things that we've actually done with real customers. You can also get all this code and much more yourself in a very easy way to download and consume. So we'll show you a lot of that as we move forward.
Good. Before we actually start, just out of curiosity, how many of you are actually SharePoint developers? I'm just looking into the majority of the room. We were kind of expecting that, to be honest, because there's quite a high competition at the same time on the other time other slots. Yeah. And how many of you are actually implementing SharePoint apps? So that's half, or just more than a half, which means that the half of the room is still doing full-trust code, which is absolutely fully supported still, so no doubt. But we gradually are thinking through how do we make the transition to the new way of implementing those customizations. And this is what this session is all about. We will have a discussion, kind of a high level, more even a business or process level discussion about what does the transformation actually means. So what is the learnings, what we've been doing with the customers during the past 2 years, and how do we approach transformation projects? And we will be also revealing some of that stuff and, for example, releasing templates and process guidance in MSDM pretty soon on this topic as well, which will definitely help on you land the deals and land the transformation projects with the customers as well. We also want to make sure that we give you learnings from the real-life transitions, so essentially real examples, because we actually do this for a living as a full-time job, pretty much. Well, you not that much anymore within your new role. You're just waving your hands, but just kidding. And then what we wanted to do is that we wanted to make kind of a few typical SharePoint app model customizations or transformations. So what does it mean, and what's actually the advantages of moving to the cloud? We didn't want to repeat some of the stuff we'd done previously, for example, in TechEd Europe, because you've probably seen some of those demos as well. But we wanted to make slightly more advanced scenarios. So we want to show really how you can take advantage of the Microsoft Azure to really be the engine for your Office 365 and cloud-based implementations. If you're doing on-prem, there are slightly different alternatives to do similar stuff, but let's talk about those during the demos as well. And we definitely want to show you uber cool Office 365 patterns and practices provisioning engine, which will help you to create templates and templating systems within the cloud, which is really, really new stuff, which is now getting really, really stable.
Just this week, right?
Just as this week, actually, the first introduction video went live during this week. So we really want to show that one in practice for you as well, if you have any questions. And hopefully you get as excited as we are on that engine, which should help the field on the adaptation of the cloud.
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't seen it, we do have a fairly compelling developer vision. It's evolved just a little bit. We still absolutely believe in what traditionally folks would call Office apps or SharePoint apps, which is really what's over on the user's side of the equation. So we call those contextual applications, so putting applications, surfacing them where users are doing their work. And then really where a lot of our investments now are really on this data side. So you'll hear us talking about O365 APIs, and you'll hear us talking about all of the great API endpoints that we're doing across not just SharePoint, but also the rest of the workloads. And so that's one thing I want you guys to walk out, or two things. There's two things I want you to walk out of this room today when you think about this developer vision is, one, we still care about your traditional scenario. Two, we're going to unlock new scenarios across the suite. So you're not just going to be a SharePoint developer. You'll be able to develop against Exchange and other areas of Office 365. So you'll hear a lot of folks, actually we'll talk about that here in a few minutes, but you'll hear folks saying, why should I learn this thing when there's that new O365 API thing? Those things will come together, and they're going to come together very soon. And so the investments that you're making today on either side of this are investments that will pay off in the future should you start to build standalone apps and things of that nature.
We do have an actually quite nice announcement related on the slides as well on that one. So one of the things what we wanted to do also within the session, so we wanted to start with the common kind of a statements what the field is giving to us all the time. So we want to make really sure that you understand what are we talking when we move to the app model. What does it actually mean and what are the steps and also the statements related on SharePoint Server 2016 as an example, related on the full trust code, related on app model transition. And so we will have quite a few slides as an introduction topic, which are having statements, and then we're going to walk them through together within the audience before we move into those demos and other topics. But we really want to make sure that you understand, when we talk about the app model transformation, it actually means a rewrite. It really means that you cannot actually take the existing server-side code and just magically run it through with some magical tooling, which will suddenly come up within app model implementation. That's not reality, because quite often we need to think about completely alternative way to light up the same functionality using then the app model techniques.
And I would say when I was still in the field, when I would engage on these projects, quite often I would go into a customer and we're not even transforming to a different model, but you would step back and look at what they've built and you would decide that maybe there's a better way to do this. I used to use a story where I went into a customer one time and they were having some challenges with their SharePoint implementation, and I go in and I look and I do an inventory of their customizations, and they had 55 master pages, they had 186 page layout, or no, it was a 90 some odd page layouts, and they had 186 unique .NET web parts they had written. And you know, of course, that sounds a little sketchy when you say that. So we dove in, we rolled up our sleeves, and what we ended up with was one master page, about six page layouts, and we replaced 90% of those web parts with out-of-the-box content query web parts. So you know, this is an excellent opportunity to look at what has been developed before and if there's a better way to do it.
And that's really the key point to understand. The functionality and the business requirements, they're not going to go away. What we need to do is think about, okay, the business requirements are there, and we can absolutely have and we need to have the discussion with the customer. Do we need to still actually have this capability? What does it mean within the app model? Is this worth of the investment? Quite often what we see within the customers, there was one customer who had 120 WSP packages within the dedicated farm, and actually 89 of them were thrown away. So we were able to concentrate on 21 or whatever we ended up being from looking through the actual functionality which we need to transform. So the functionality and the business requirements is still there. And that's usually the case even in a farm solution implementation, which takes the longest time. The technical implementation, when you think of it, that's relatively simple in the end. But figuring out what the customer actually wants, that's always the difficult part. The fact that are we then deploying the master page using a module element in a feature framework, or are we pushing that using CSAM to the cloud or on-premises, that's kind of a technical nuance.
And it's the not customer really... typically doesn't care.
And the customer typically doesn't care. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
One of the things which is common also, kind of a question what we commonly get, is that do we have any existing tool which we can run through to magical farm solution, it would magically come off the app model solution. The reality is that we don't. The transformation is such a unique thing. We need to look on those functionalities one by one. We don't have a tool which will just magically come off with the app model implementation. We do have great tools, however, for the assessment part, so we are able to understand what the customer is actually having right now within the farm. But it's not about the technology, actually. It's more about what does the functionality enables from an end-user perspective. One of the things what we also want to make sure that is that the common question, will the farm solutions be supported in SharePoint Server 2016? They will be absolutely supported. So what we want to do is continue, if you haven't seen previous investments in the farm solutions and you don't have an opportunity to transform, that's absolutely fine. It comes down and they will be supported in SharePoint Server 2016. Where investments are, however, done on the app model side, even in on-premises. We really want people actually move to the app model gradually so that you implement once and it will work in on-premises or in cloud, if the customer is moving to the cloud or running the stuff in on-premises.
Yeah, and I just want to reinforce what Vez is saying here today. We know that there's been a huge ecosystem and a huge install base of SharePoint built up over the years. I made a living for 10 years out in the field doing nothing but building on top of SharePoint. And so these things aren't going to just go away tomorrow. We know that. We need to have a story that's going to allow you to use the investments that you've made on-prem. But what we're seeing more and more is the financial model of Office 365 is so compelling, things like terabytes of OneDrive storage, that you're going to start to see your customers or the customer that you or the company that you work at want to move that direction, right? And we're not saying you need to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We want to make sure that you can continue to use what you have today and extend that surface area into the cloud and rewrite your things as they make sense. That's the same approach we took within Microsoft. I actually helped drive our initial implementation towards the cloud, and we ended up making a conscious decision to leave behind a good number of our intranet properties until such time as we could rewrite them, just because sure. Nobody had budget for it, and you know it wasn't time to do that. So you'll hear a lot of things out in the blogosphere that you know sound very controversial. Read them with a grain of salt, and.
You actually mentioned a really good point. So quite often when we do the transformation to the cloud or we evaluate what the customer is having, there's a lot of solutions which we actually leave behind.
Right.
And then we end up having a hybrid deployment. There's some solutions which doesn't really make any sense to make a significant investment to rewrite that as an app model implementation. We leave that to on-premises, but we take the maturity of the things and move them to the cloud. And that's where we need to have that discussion with the business owners who actually know where the solution is and what's the value of the solutions. Good. One of the common questions, this is pretty obvious already, should be, will we ever support farm solutions in Office 365? Never. That's never going to happen. So this should be pretty clear. We will do all of our investments in a SharePoint app model site, technically it's a SharePoint add-in site now that we're changing the marketing term. SharePoint app is essentially SharePoint add-in starting from like today, that's my understanding.
And you'll start to see entirely new experiences that are built that only have extensibility in this new model. I can't call out any specifically right off the top of my head, but you'll start to see that moving forward. Where that's the preferred method that we would like to see people utilize. I mean, there's benefit not just for us in our cloud. You know, obviously we have a huge incentive to keep our service stable. And when you have a financially backed SLA for a service like this, allowing somebody else to inject code into your worker process is a huge risk which you're financially liable for. So let's not even, you know, take out the technical thing, because I get that a lot. Hey, you guys could do better. You know, you guys could run this with my custom code. You've done it for years in your dedicated environment. You're right, it's expensive and it's really risky, and it's not something we're ever going to do in Office 365. I don't know that we've come across a scenario that's common that we haven't been able to do in the app model. And,
sure.
You know, we'd love to hear it. If you find those, we're listening. We'll talk at the end of the session about how you can submit feedback to us on things that you find challenging or that you're blocked. But just know that this is not something that, I don't care if everybody in the world said, we want you to install WSPs in Office 365. There's some real challenges to that, both from a technical problem space and the business side.
Sure. So. And like you said, we're highly committed on making sure that if it's a missing API, whatever the APIs you need to have in the app model, we will actually make it available, unless it's a farm administrative operation and so on, because we can't actually expose those within the Office 365, which is understandable. It's a journey, and we're on the journey, and we've been enabling a lot of new APIs within the past year as well, if you've been following up on what's actually happening. One of the things what we also quite often hear from the customers is the following statement. I saw a blog post in the internet saying that the app model is dead. No, it's not. Let's make sure. We might be changing the terminology. It's no longer a SharePoint app model. It's a SharePoint add-in. But that doesn't mean that the technology or the implementation or the investments what you've done in a SharePoint app model would actually go away.
Yeah, these loosely coupled interfaces and interacting with our products via these interfaces is the model of the future. We call that, in general, the app model. You know, the way I used to like to look at it and the way I've been explaining it recently is that when we shipped an on-premise product like SharePoint that is that extensible, that you can pretty much just change out any piece of it that you want if you don't like what we're doing, there was great power in that. We really were just shipping an interface, and you could change out pieces on the front side and on the back side. You had a lot of control right? And I did it, Veza did it. You know, there was times I replaced 80% of the user controls and things that were in those master pages just to make it exactly what we wanted. Now, when you move to the cloud, it's more of an abstract class. You can't go switching out the pieces on the back end, and so you have to think about these things a little differently on how you're gonna achieve those same end goals. But this is really the model that we're doubling down on, and I think just to kind of reinforce that, if you want to click to the next slide, this is out of our dog food environment, our PPE environment, but I really just wanted to call out and show you guys the investment that the team's making there, where when you're building one of these apps, you'll be able to register it with Active Directory. So the existing app model for SharePoint 2013 is actually backed by Azure ACS, and then all of our new O365 API investments that you're hearing about are backed by Azure Active Directory and a technology called Common Consent. That allows us to work across workloads. So ACS was very much a silo for SharePoint. Azure Active Directory lets us kind of break out of the SharePoint jail and go across to these other workloads. So do things like work with Exchange, do things like work with Link, and even work with third parties through OpenID Connect. And so these are the investments that we're making. We're doing nothing but making the app model better and moving towards a common app model from an auth N and auth C perspective. So I think it's super important that you cast away the fear, uncertainty, and doubt when you see those types of blog posts that try to state that we're moving in a different direction, because we're just flat out not. This is the direction we're going. This is the only way. If you think about it from a technology perspective, it's not just the only way that we're going to be able to run a service that that has the types of SLAs we have. It's the only way that we're going to get out to all these other endpoints, right? So we now have Office on iPad. We now have Office on Android devices. And we want those types of experiences to be able to light up in those platforms. And so we need to do this in a very loosely coupled cross-platform way.
Good. And that's essentially the final statement. I'm not going to do more than all of these lines. But seriously, this is the model where we're heading. This is where the investments are done. Whenever you have a chance, you can jump on that train and then gradually start moving on the same direction where the product is heading. Yep. And that's why we have programs like Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, which is helping the farm solution and the classic server-side developers to then transition to the app model. And we're lighting up and showing how to do typical customizations using the app model techniques.
Yep.
And the whole thinking of the app model is definitely the fact that as a developer, you don't need to think about and cloud as an exception or the on-premises as an exception. We implement one piece of a code or an implementation, is it a loosely coupled implementation, and it works within the cloud or it works within the on-premises.
Yeah.
So it's a one implementation of the whole thing. And that's really the key foundation of things. More and more of the customers are moving to the cloud, so we really need to make sure that the stuff what we write is capable of being running in on-premises and in cloud as well.
Well, and just like we, you know, we built this pattern so that we could upgrade our servers and services in Office 365 without you having to worry about your custom code needing to be touched. That was an incredibly huge amount of labor that we would go through for an upgrade cycle in our dedicated environment, as an example, which was representative of what everyone was pretty much doing. I'm going to install Service Pack 1 in SharePoint. Hey, devs, you better go make sure all your stuff still works with Service Pack 1, and you'd go through that whole cycle. And so by moving to this loosely coupled architecture, your infrastructure guys get unlocked to be able to move a little faster, and you get unlocked from having to do all of that maintenance work every time to see what we've changed with the full trust APIs.
Good. Before we go to the actual demos and start going through the code, one of the things what we also want to be really sure, let's say, make sure that you as a developer understand the direction. So if you think about the app model and add-ins and the SharePoint add-ins, we essentially can categorize the SharePoint customization in three different models, and excluding obviously the sandbox solution, because that's kind of a semi-legacy functionality.
Well, but it is worth bringing up here. So there are folks who say, well, I've already invested heavily in sandbox solutions. What am I going to do? Am I going to have to rewrite all that? No. We will be supporting that for the foreseeable future in our cloud. We will not be making investments there. If you put 20 web parts on a page, anybody here ever put 20 sandbox web parts on a page? You guys are all smart. You know what's going to happen. If you raised a bug to us and said that page is performing slow, we're just going to shake our heads and say, yes, yes it is. And if you do that, that's going to always be slow. So there are some known limitations to sandbox solutions, but don't think that we're just going to rip that rug out from underneath you just yet. But I would, if you're moving from full trust code, I would not recommend that you look at moving to sandbox just because it feels a little easier. the investment that you're going to make is actually probably going to be about the same as totally going to the app model, and you're going to be jumping one step ahead. So. Okay.
Good. And on the slides, so if you think about the, let's say, the three ways of having SharePoint customizations, on the left side, we have the classic, well, in quotes, classic full-text code solutions, fully supported still. The only challenge with that one is that it's not supported in Office 365, and it never will be, because we can't actually have full-text code running in Office 365, like mentioned. On the right side, we have the store apps, and that's a typical way of how people visualize a SharePoint app. They think about those apps which are in Office Store, and you're able to download them down, they're SharePoint-hosted apps, and then they run JavaScript. And that's not actually the whole story. We have the middle section as well, which is essentially client-side solutions, remote provisioning, stuff what we actually enable within the sites by running JavaScript, for example, as an embedded JavaScript within the site itself. It doesn't have to be a SharePoint app. It doesn't have to be coming from the store. It might be coming from the corporate catalog, or it might be something what we are remotely pushing to the sites, and it's lighting up functionalities and provisioning stuff within the site itself.
Yep.
But it's the loosely coupled model where the code is actually executed outside of the SharePoint still. But it's not really a SharePoint app in the sense that you actually go to a store and download that, and it's working in an iframe isolated way.
And I want to be really, really clear with folks. People a lot of times look at our app model and they say, wow, there's all these different options. We used to have three, now we have two. There's SharePoint hosted and there's provider hosted. I'm going to be very, very clear with you. If you're not an ISV trying to develop and deploy through our store, you probably shouldn't be looking at SharePoint hosted. Now, there's some instances where it's useful in an enterprise perspective, but your default thinking should be to the provider hosted model just because it gives you so much more capability. The SharePoint hosted model does exactly what it was intended and designed to do, which is provide isolation. Okay, so the data that app writes to is its own little island called an app web. It can't call things outside of its app domain. There's a lot of restrictions we put on there. Because why? Because you don't know that developer who wrote that thing for the store. If we let it just inject JavaScript into your page and sniff around, I mean, they could impersonate your CEO. Gosh knows what they could do from a security perspective. And so SharePoint hosted apps really were built with that target in mind. Okay?
Sure.
So trying to jam that into an enterprise scenario, I've yet to see one be successful.
Sure.
I'm just being open.
Sure.
Okay? A lot of people find them compelling because then they don't have to worry about where am I going to host this thing, right? And that was a lot of the attraction that you had before with SharePoint was, I just have a SharePoint farm. I can jam my customizations in there. I don't have to spin up extra websites. I don't have to have this extra infrastructure. And that was very compelling. I argue that you probably added more SharePoint servers to your farm and paid licensing for that than if you'd have just stood that custom code up in IIS. But that's probably a philosophical argument that we could have after the session. So,
sure.
I just wanted to be clear. The things that you are seeing us recommend from an enterprise side are very much the provider-hosted model. Okay? You won't hear us talking much about SharePoint-hosted, and there's a reason.
That's a good way of putting that. One more kind of a slide, let's say a final introduction slide or a process slide. And this is more a business-driven thinking, but this is the transformation process, which will be shared in MSDN as well. What we've been using as we work with our Office 365 dedicated customers, whenever we've been helping them to transition to the app model. And this is a process thinking, and I know that the majority of the audience is developers. I'm a developer as well. But we need to also understand the best way approaching these projects, so we wanted to actually have that slide going through as well. The number one thing to understand is the readiness, absolutely. So the customer or the people you work with, they actually understand what is the app model, what does it mean. We have made the decisions about the hosting. We know where it's going to host it. Is it going to be a provider hosted? Hopefully, yes. And is it going to be in Azure or is it going to be an on-premises IIS servers? That's the number one thing, that everybody is leveled up on that one. Then we do an assessment. We want to really understand what the customer is having right now within their function, within their full-text code or the farm solution implementation. And that's where we don't actually necessarily even concentrate on code. We've done quite a few of these assessments, and we started by looking into that full-text code and farm solution code, but then we realized that actually that doesn't explain how the end user is using the functionality. It's much more beneficial to schedule meetings and demos, where then the business owners are actually showing, this is how we use, that web part we don't actually use, so we are able to drop those requirements away. How do we do the transition? Then we do planning, which is essentially the high-level thinking of the app model solution transformation. So we know exactly what are the main topics, what kind of provider-hosted applications we need to have. Is it an Azure? Is it a web job? Is it a storage queue, an enabler, whatever we need to do. After that comes the actual implementation. This is obviously the big piece, which is then dependent on the previous steps. In our way of working, quite often, actually, after the first three steps, that's when we do estimates, because then we can then we actually know how much will it cost, because we know where we're heading. And with the dedicated customers, we did actually fixed time-framed, step one, two, and three. And after that, then it's the variable, because the implementation is always debatable on the amount of work, what they're doing. And then the final step is obviously the actual deployment of the solution. And one of the key points here to remember that it's not just getting the app solution and app functionality light up for the customer. We need to also think about the transformation. So how do we actually tackle the existing content if we need to? How do we transform the existing site collections to use the app model way of offering the functionality so we're able to retract the farm solution away from the farm if needed? But there's a lot of thinking. There's a lot of additional IP coming up on this one in MSDN pretty soon, and new templates and new PowerPoints and all of that, which will be helpful.
And I think that is actually an interesting thing to talk about here. Veza and crew have really done a really good job being open and sharing, even not just the code. So if you hear about Office Developer Patterns and Practices and you go check out our GitHub repo, or you go to dev.office.com and you start reading about that, it's not just the code. They're also sharing PowerPoints and all kinds of artifacts that they're using in these engagements. And that stuff shows up in our GitHub repo first. And then later, our content publishing folks come through, and they've been publishing it into MSDN and helping us, you know, massage our wording, because we're technical and we don't really care about those things. So if you want to see the latest and greatest, our GitHub repos are really the place to go. And then if you want to see published on MSDN so you can point it to a customer and say it's official Microsoft guidance, then, you know, shortly thereafter, that stuff shows up on MSDN.
Good. Let's move on to the demo section. So let's forget about what we, let's not forget about the previous slides, but let's actually move on to more technical and development-oriented stuff. What we wanted to do with demos is actually show you slightly more and slightly advanced scenarios with the app model, which are not actually showing you the typical story with an app part or lighting up a custom action, kind of an alternative ways of approaching needed scenarios. One of the really typical pattern is the JavaScript embed pattern. And to be honest, now we're getting it recorded as well, it was first called JavaScript injection pattern, but then somebody said that, well, the injection doesn't sound good, let's change the name to be JavaScript embed pattern, which is absolutely fine. It is actually embedding a JavaScript in the pipeline of the page rendering, which is much more better way of actually explaining that. But I'm going to explain the slide, and Steve's going to do a demo on this one. So what we're going to do is that as part of the site provisioning, usually as part of the site provisioning or as part of the installation of a provider-hosted application, for example, the app installed event, we actually add a reference to that site using a web.customAction collection. And what we do is that we add a reference to an external JavaScript file. We don't actually install an app as such, but when we do this reference and the adding the user custom action to the site, our JavaScript is part of then the page rendering and HTML creation when we render that page for the end user. And what it means is that our JavaScript has actually taken ownership of the elements and functionalities what we are showing within the master pages or within the UI. And we're able to then bring additional functionalities which are available for the end users. In this particular case, we're actually going to show you how to do a top-level navigation, for example, cross-site collection navigation, which is a pretty typical scenario, without the requirement of having a custom master page, which is one of the good practices of thinking in the SharePoint development. So if you can't, try to avoid to override the out-of-the-box master page. And there's multiple reasons for that. We're not going to go too detailed on that one.
Yep. We actually have 8 hours of virtual academy training out on Microsoft Virtual Academy if you'd like to go into the weeds with those recommendations, so we won't go too much into that. With this, I'm going to cut over to my machine here, I think.
Wrong pattern.
Wrong
one
pattern.
Of the machines.
Here
there we go.
All right, so again, if you saw on the slide, we have a link in the deck. You can get it later. It's out on GitHub. Every one of these demos are on GitHub. You can pull them down. You can F5 them. I'm going to show you just at a real high level how that works. So just assume all I've done is I've pulled down this code sample from our GitHub repo, which is great. And it's got a few solutions here, a couple of solutions here. It's got my actual apps, app project here. With my app manifest. That's the part that actually gets installed in SharePoint, and then it's got a provider-hosted web project here. Really, all I had to do after I pulled it down from GitHub is all I had to do was come in here and give it my site URL for where my developer site collection is. That was it. I created a developer site collection in my Office 365 tenant, and now I'm going to come back over here and I'm going to hit F5. So I'll show you what it does first, and then we'll jump in and we'll actually look at how it's doing it. So this is a really simple example. These types of things are typically done as part of a site provisioning process. You'll hear Veza talk about things like remote provisioning. That's definitely a pattern that you should get familiar with, and we can show you a little bit more in subsequent demos. Let me put in my password. And typically, when you run these the first time, you'll get a dialog that asks if you trust it. I think since I prepped my demo earlier, I think I've already trusted it. But boom. Every one of these samples actually gives you a nice little screen here that talks about what the sample does and then gives you some buttons to actually do it. So you can see here that it's really what this is going to do is add secondary navigation to my site. Previously, you would have probably taken an approach of customizing the master page or something like that. This is an alternate way to do it. So here, what I'm going to do is it says I'm going to inject the second level navigation, so I'm just clicking the button. Once that gets done, it says that it has been applied to the host web. I can go back to site, and you can see it. So basically what I've done is underneath the suite navigation here for Office 365, I now have a second level, and I can put whatever links I want in there. And that's all done with JavaScript, like I said. So if I close that, let's go look at the actual code. So if you look at the app manifest itself, there's really nothing interesting there. We're going to start from behind our default.aspx. I am going to come over here a little bit and show you guys. Let me scroll down. So page load really just does the Chrome control. But if you look here, this is where the actual magic is happening. So when I click that button, it is going to a method called addJSLink. So I'm going to go to the definition of that, and this is where it happens. So you can see here that we're setting up some URLs there. We're setting up a link to our JavaScript. So we've written some JavaScript called injectNavigation.js, which is part of this project. And then here you can see where we're grabbing a collection of the existing actions, so the user custom actions that are already applied to the web. We're loading them, executing the query, and then from there we're going through. Let me scroll down just a little bit more. And you can see from there we're actually going through and we're checking to see if our inject navigation is already there. If it is, we want to delete it. And then we want to go ahead and re-add it. So that way I can rerun this thing and update it as many times as I like. But that really is, that's it. I'm just setting a user custom action. I'm telling it some JavaScript, and I'm assigning it to the web. That's pretty much the meat of the magic. Now, if you go look at the actual JavaScript itself, which is under here, so we've got inject navigation. It's really not that complex. So we've got some, you can see here that we're actually using local storage. Highly recommend. So anybody who's done any really complex navigation queries inside of SharePoint with full trust code knows that those can get quite expensive on the server. And so you probably took some sort of server-side caching approaches so that your users wouldn't have to suffer through that pain every time and your servers wouldn't come crawling to their knees. You still need to cache. You still need to think about caching, but the cache you're probably going to use is most likely on the client side. So think about these new modern browsers and all the great, wonderful things that you can do with local storage, or some of the old tried and true methods of cookies. Those are all still valid, but you know, perf is still a problem even when you're in our cloud, and you'll want to make sure that you're doing some of those types of things. So here we're really just checking to see if something's in the cache locally. If it's not, here's where we're actually coming in and we're actually injecting a bunch of HTML into the page.
That's pretty ugly looking stuff, by the way.
Pretty ugly looking stuff, but hey, that's actually easier to read than camel. Anybody else disagree?
But essentially what we're doing here is that we are transforming the web control way, the server-side way of implementing controls, user controls, composite controls, or whatever, left navigation, top navigation, to be a client-side implementation. Yeah. And we're building that in a JavaScript. And this is just a pretty ugly demo, though, from a code perspective, but it's enabling and showing the pattern how you can still bring individual functionalities within the pages. And when you think of it, this is exactly the same model where how do you embed, for example, a Yammer discussion to your SharePoint, or how do you embed Google Maps or Bing Maps to your website? You essentially add a div there, you have a pointer to the JavaScript, and then you reference an external JavaScript. And we're essentially just taking advantage of the similar thinking. It's not an app, but we're just adding that reference to that external JavaScript, which is, can then light up some functionalities and can be as complex as possible, mm-hmm. or as simple as possible. So it's an alternative way of approaching the whole SharePoint app transformation or SharePoint add-ins by not being forced to then do an app as such. So it's taking advantage of that remote provisioning thingy. All of the demos, we have a link to our Office 365 developer patterns and practices location, which where you can actually pinpoint, for example, for that particular example. There's quite a few examples what we have already there, which is
literally
explaining
100.
Well, 140 or something like
100,
that.
Over 100.
Yes. So. Individual examples. So one of the things what we've also wanted to kind of cover today, so we didn't want to go to basics and show you that you can do X and Y and Z. We wanted to go slightly more advanced. Like Steve said earlier, the provider-hosted application is a provider-hosted app model is extremely powerful. And one of the really powerful ways of approaching the provider-hosted app model is taking advantage of the services, what the Microsoft Azure is actually providing. And one of the patterns what we've been using with many of our customers is actually taking advantage of Azure storage queues and web jobs. Pretty new technology, you might be familiar with that or not. I'm going to really run through a few demos based on the similar thinking. But what it actually gives us is a really neat process where, how is that arrow completely messed up? Anyway. So where we end user can go to provider hosted application, and the end user can start a process. The process itself is actually adding a message to the storage queue, which is essentially, you might, if you're an old school developer, it's message queue for processing, MSMQ, in the on-premises. What then will happen is that storage queue message will automatically initiate your web job, which is running in the Microsoft Azure. So at this point, the end user is already freed. The end user, if it's a long-running operation, you really don't want to show the GIF animation for the end user, that then we take over or hijack the end user's browser, for example, for provisioning something or doing long-lasting operation. At this point, whenever the message has been added to the storage queue, the end user is freed up. So the end user can continue doing something, but our task is still ongoing on the background. And then the web job is actually started, it's executed by the storage queue, and it gets that message from the storage queue. And then that can actually use the app-only token to access the SharePoint and then do operations against Office 365 in whatever possible means. And as an example, we're going to do a slightly more complex demo after this one for the site provisioning. But let's do a quick demo on explaining what does this actually mean in the practice. What do I need to do to take advantage of this asynchronous process, and how does it actually relate from an end-user experience perspective? So if you switch me on the screen. And that's not me. That's somebody else. There we go. That's me.
There you go.
Here we go. So this is a core.queue web job usage example, a really simple example. This is not flashy stuff because we're from engineering, not from marketing. That's the thing. But we're trying to show you different approaches. And what this one is doing is that, well, it has for obviously the typical documentation part like we do for the patterns and practices stuff. It has the SharePoint provider-hosted app introduction project. And these are actually provider-hosted applications. So this would be actually running then within the Microsoft Azure or within the on-premises. Then we have this job fellow here, which is actually the web job. That's the one which we will automatically in a synchronous way start in the cloud. And that will then connect back on the Office 365 based on the request what the UI is actually giving. And then we have a proper way of implementing any .NET code. We have a common business logic component, which we can then test and call from any locations. So I'm going to do an F5 for this one. It doesn't take long. It's going to spin up my browser. And I will be then running the example from my local IIS Express.
And I do want to, while he's spinning that up, Veza touched on it before, but we're showing you things in Azure. Obviously, you could do these things on-prem, but you wouldn't be able to use Azure. So you could have an IIS website. You could look at things like MSMQ. You can stitch together these same types of solutions in your on-prem environment. But it is super awesome that the Azure team is innovating that fast. These services that he's actually showing you didn't even exist when we started down this journey with our customers. And it was very timely that we were able to get these services because we started to find out that synchronous patterns against this cloud when you're doing things like site provisioning, that takes a while and it's not a great user experience. And so with that, I think it's very interesting to look at how both you can utilize the capabilities of Azure as they come out with them without the Office team, having to actually do any investment in our products to make them available.
True. And like mentioned, this is rather a simple example. We're going to do a slightly more complex example as a final demo of the session. But this is more about showing you the difference. So we do have two different patterns. We have the synchronous operation and asynchronous operation. If you think about the typical synchronous operation, it might take a while for the end user. We're hijacking the end user browser. And essentially, we're showing some nice GIF animation, and it's working as fast as it can to do some operation against the SharePoint site. But essentially, you're freeing up the end user. And this is not really a good end-user experience, even though natively even Office 365 actually does that quite often. And what happens in this particular demo, this is a relatively simple demo. It's essentially now executed a synchronous operation and a document library created using a synchronous operation. So it actually created a one document library, host web, using that synchronous approach. So I do now have one additional document library in my site contents. Just going to show you that it actually did that, which is created using a tick number. I said that this is not a marketing demo, so this is an engineering demo. It's creating a document library using CSAM, relatively simple stuff. But now the difference on the thinking is that the asynchronous approach is actually spinning up this asynchronously. So from an end-user perspective, the operation is extremely fast. So, and what now happened was that the operation was actually added in the storage queue. And at the same time when that happened, my Azure Storage web job was actually spinned up. And that's now actually ongoing and running within my Azure. So I'm going to quickly jump on the Microsoft Azure and show you this one in practice, because we should be able to still see that execution still ongoing. So what I have in the Microsoft Azure is that I've deployed a web job, which is continuously running web job. And what that happens is, it's actually in stopped status for some reason. Oh, it's in running status. Okay, we didn't update that. What that happens is that whenever I'm adding a new item in the storage queue, I have hooked up with two lines of code the web job, so it will be executed automatically by Azure whenever the item is added on the storage queue. So now this web job is then taking advantage of the app-only token. And what it means is that in my app config, we have registered. Where do we have our configuration? Here we go. So we have the needed client ID and client secret actually managed within the Microsoft Azure side. So we're using essentially that client ID and client secret now to connect on Office 365, and then we do the modification in a synchronous way.
Wait, so then I could have the same code, the same project deployed and pointed at different sites with different...
You can do whatever you want, Absolutely. Because now the client ID and secret has quite a lot of different permissions, and it can do much more than just to create a document library. It could start creating a site collections, it could start creating a site, it could start creating hierarchies of sites, or collect the information within the Office 365. And in this particular case, we can actually see also from the Microsoft Azure side, which is really cool. The locking system is really awesome. So we're able to actually see the latest implementation and latest executions of the web job. And in this case, we're able to, for example, see that the process queue message has been executed, and it was success 1 minute ago. So we're able to actually see what's happening within the cloud. It was able to connect back on the SharePoint, and most likely in the best possible way, if you go back onto that SharePoint site, have a look on the host web, we actually now have a new document library created to the site. Not a super sexy demo, I know, but from a thinking perspective and a synchronous processing perspective, it's a huge opportunity to then start running alternative thinking, alternative processes using the similar way of implementation. And quickly looking under the code, so we don't actually need to have a look on that one during the more complex demos. I'm going to add a breakpoint here. I'm going to click one more time that asynchronous operation. And this is seriously 6 lines of code, or well, 8, depending on how many lines do you combine in a single line. But this is essentially the operation and method what we're calling within our provider hosted application. We have already created a serial object, which is actually having a URL and my requester name. And what we're doing is that we are adding an item to the storage queue within the Microsoft Azure. We're taking advantage of the storage queue SDK, and we're adding that message, and we're serializing that message to the storage queue. And that's pretty much, that's like 6 lines of code. But what's the magic is actually is on the web job side itself. So in the web job, which has been already deployed on the Microsoft Azure, the only thing what I need to do is make sure that my Azure connectivity, the Azure web job storage, is pointing to the same storage as the item which is adding those items to the queue, and then actually just decorate a one function call, which will then help on me. The whole decoration in here will make sure that whenever there's an item added on the storage queue, my web job is executed, and then I can actually do whatever the business logic is that I need to do. So in this particular case, as an example, we're taking advantage of the app-only access token, which we need to, because we don't have a user. We're essentially elevating to this app-only access token, and then we're accessing the sites using that token and modifying the sites as needed. Relatively simple thing, but let's actually build on that thinking. So let's take that thinking in a slightly new level. Can you switch back on the slides?
Yep.
So on that same thinking, let's take this slightly more on a slightly different level. So if you think about SharePoint, SharePoint is all about site provisioning. It always typically starts from the fact that as a farm solution developer, we used to create site definitions, we used to create web templates. As a non-net XML file and feature frameworks, we were doing modules. Now when we are in Office 365, we really want to move away from the feature framework implementation. What we want to do is take advantage of so-called SharePoint remote provisioning. What it means is that from an end-user perspective, we actually create the sites and site collections using CSAM. And we seriously use the client-side object model to even create the site columns and content types to the site collections, which we create as part of the provisioning. And on that thinking, so essentially from an end-user perspective, the end-user goes to a UI, the end-user selects a template. That UI is actually on our provider-hosted application side, running in on-premises or in Azure. And based on the template, we're then creating a new site on the SharePoint based on the template configuration. Now, as part of the Office 365 developer patterns and practices, we've been running that program for quite a long time, and there's a lot of customers who want to actually do remote provisioning. They want to take advantage of this thinking that we're able to override the whole ONNET XML and the feature framework. The challenge of doing that is always that, okay, how do I then define what is my template? Well, you could always create an XML, which is then read and transformed to be a CSAM, but then it's still an XML. So as part of the PNP, the Patterns and Practices Guide, and we started thinking this engine, which is still supporting the XML approach as well, but we can do something really cool. So what we can do is, for example, the following business scenario. The business users, there will be a selected persons of users, a business editors, content editors, which will edit a site using a browser. So they will have a dedicated site, template sites, where they will go and create document libraries, whatever is needed, using their browser. And whenever the end user goes to a UI and requests a new site collection, what our engine will do on fly which is open source and available as part of the patterns and practices guidance, it actually extracts the changes from those live sites and provisions new sites based on that template. So this way, you don't actually need to create on it XML. You don't have to create feature framework. You don't have to create XMLs if you don't want to actually create templates within the SharePoint. And we can actually bring this to a level that if a person, we might have multiple different templates. We might have individual templates for HR organization, for services organizations, for whatever the organizations within your company. And the engine itself is, as I mentioned, it's open source. It's available in PNP. We're looking into contributions from the community as well. But it's already in a relatively good stage. So what we have is essentially an engine. And I'm showing the key pieces of code, because this is extremely cool stuff. We have, whenever you add a reference to the PNP core component, we will give you extension method. As long as you have a reference to the core component, you will, for example, get a method called getProvisioningTemplate. And what we can do with that one is extract delta changes from any site compared to out-of-the-box team site or out-of-the-box publishing site in V2. And what we can do with that template is a domain object. It's not an XML at this point. What we can do is that we're able to serialize that and save that as an XML, for example, to Azure Blob Store or a SharePoint list or a file system. If we want to, we don't have to. But the most magical thing, at least from my perspective, I'm an old school ONET XML developer, is that I can actually use that template on fly, which I'm extracting to that site A, and actually apply that to a target site. And what will happen is that all the changes, what the UI, what we've done using a browser, will be applied to that other site. And it's seriously 6 lines of code. Right now, if you take advantage of the patterns and practices core component, which is a community-driven program as well. So let's actually have a look on this one. We do have a night, 10 minutes time to actually run through the demo. Steve, could you press me through? So let's stop the previous demo, and let's move to this following demo. So this one is provisioning, and there's a lot of there's actually a video recording which we already released in Channel 9, which is showing some of this stuff as well. Is a provisioning framework async. So it's actually, you can find this underneath the solution in patterns and practices guidance. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do an F5 just to show the basic UI, what this solution is doing. The UI itself is actually not interesting. This is just a provider-hosted application which is showing self-service site collection creation UI. It's up to you and up to your business case what kind of UI you actually want to provide for your end users. The engine itself it can be used using PowerShell, it can be used using a console application, or in whatever service code within the Microsoft Azure. So there's our UI. This could be a typical self-service site collection creation feeling. End user or project manager comes here, gives us a name like build 2015. Let's give it a URL, build 2015. And then the end user can actually select what kind of a template we want to use. The templates themselves are actually XML, serialized XML of the template information. But what I can do is that I can also use an existing site as my template. And that's taking advantage of the PNP core component, using the CSAM and RESTful APIs, operating and extracting the information from that live site and applying that to the target site. So this is now my template site. This is my imaginary template site. Just to make sure that I'm not actually fooling, let's do some small changes on the template site. So give me a document library name.
Foo?
Foo? Foo is not good. Well, we might have been agreeing there. Somebody else from the audience? Important documents. Excellent. So let's add a new library name. And let's create that and call that important documents. And create a document library on that live template site. And now the template, that new document library is on the site, so we know that whenever we apply the template, we absolutely know that if it's working, that important documents is going to be there. The provider-hosted application, the UI side, is essentially just what it's doing is that it's actually taking all the, collecting the information within the form. It is adding that request and serializing. I'm going to actually show you the object in here. There we go. It is actually collecting all the URL request and time zone request and all of that. And then it's adding that to the storage queue in the same way as within the previous demo. So I'm not going to actually walk through on that one. Now, It's an asynchronous process, so right now it's going to tell me your request has been recorded and will be processed soon. And that process is now ongoing already in Microsoft Azure. But technically in Office 365, we don't know how long it's going to take to create a new site collection. So what I've done is that within the example as well, I'm going to actually bypass this with a clean site. So let me show you it this way. There's my template site, which is the one where we added that important document. I'm going to refresh. So making sure that on the left side in the recent section, we have the important document. This is my new site. So this is essentially, we always start by creating a new site using out-of-the-box site template, or out-of-the-box site definitions, to be precise, from a terminology. So what will happen for that Build 2015 demo as well, it will create a site collection using out-of-the-box theme site, and then it will apply the modifications on top of it. So let's do this manually. Within the project, we have a bypass, so-called bypass project, so which is called a helper apply custom template. What that is a console application, which is using essentially the app-only token. It's asking what is my template site, which is extracting, and what is my target site, which I'm applying. And then we're able to have a look on the code as well. So I'm going to just go here. It's asking my template site. Let's copy the template site URL. Oop, where's my console application? Just going to paste that in. And there's my target site URL. And pasting that one in as well. And what's going to now happen is that the engine itself, it's going to actually do a breakpoint pretty soon on the meaningful topic and the meaningful URL. So we have that get provisioning template extension method in the web object. And what I can do with that one is that I'm calling that, and it's going to extract me a domain object, which will be essentially containing all the modifications, what has been applied to that site, that template site, on top of out-of-the-box theme site. So it's doing a delta comparison, and it's giving me all of those changes which have been applied to that site. And after a few seconds, it obviously takes, depending on the timing is dependent on how many customizations do we have. That template object now exists, and I can actually do something like, immediate window. How do I clear immediate window? Not a clear, not a CLS.
CLR.
Sorry? Let's do it this way. So I'm going to zoom in, so no worries. Template, I can do lists, and I can do count. I'm going to zoom in a second. So it's showing me how many lists do we actually have on that site. We're able to see that there's a one list. We're able to do list. So it's a template object which I can modify also on fly in the memory. So I can build on top of that extracted template if needed. There's my important document. Which was extracted from the site. And now what we're doing in the following step is then we are applying that to the target site. So essentially, there's my apply provisioning template, there's my data object or the domain object, and again, we're using then the CSAM and the RESTful APIs, the remote operations, to now modify the target site based on our configuration. And like mentioned, this could be stored and serialized as an XML configuration, as a template if needed, if you want to have a selection of individual templates and options. It's again up to you on the business case. The engine itself is highly flexible from that perspective.
And while he's waiting on that to apply, a lot of you might be saying, well, you just showed me Save Site as template with a whole bunch of code. No, we didn't. Has anyone here used Save Site as a template in Office 365? Are you happy with it? You love it?
No.
All right. So there's a lot of real challenges with Save Site as a template, not the least of which it doesn't work against publishing sites. If there's been an app activated on the site, you can't Save Site as a template. There's a huge number of restrictions there. Also, it generates a definition for that site and then publishes, when you're creating sites subsequently off of that template, it uses that definition. If we add new features in Office 365 or we do things, you have to go recreate those templates, okay? You may or may not want to get on that train. I'm thinking not. Typically, you'll want to own the site provisioning process and have a little bit more granular control over it. And this is really what drove us to build this in Patterns and Practices.
And now if you were watching while I was refreshing the UI, It was actually gradually applying those changes. We got the important documents, we got the branding, we got the logo, and all of those settings. It goes to the level of site collections, site columns, content types, and all of that, views, and all of those settings. And now we're able to see that essentially on that target site, my template site, it has been applied the template on fly. Extracted on fly from the live site and applied on live on a fly site without any need of creating web templates or on it XMLs or feature framework, which is super cool stuff, at least from my perspective. Whee!
Good. Switching back?
Yeah, switching back because we're slightly running out of time. Well, not that much. We do have 50 seconds, so no worries. But anyway, I think the key point of the thing is that the CSAM is the future. The app model is definitely the future. What you want to do as a developer, you really want to take advantage of our developer program. Yeah. You want to go to the dev.office.com/dev program. There's email letters, newsletters, free developer subscription.
You get a free developer subscription. So if you don't already have one of those, it's a great way to develop for Office 365 without having to pay $99. If we got questions, can you come to the mic? Please? Thank you. Well, for the recording, so.
I tried registering, and it's sending us to a 404 page.
Oh. Ow, then there's an Office 365 booth in the down floor. Yep. That would be the way to go.
Yeah.
But good. I think that's all we're going to do, actually, today. So please take advantage of that offering. And hopefully the demo was cool from a template thinking perspective. Take advantage of Patterns and Practices guidance as well. Yep. And give us feedback. That's the most important thing. Thank you.
Thanks.